D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geeksters episode 121. Got a good show for you tonight. Matt Rainey's back. Hanging out with us, talking to see what's going on. He has some new stuff he wants to bring to the show. And, you know, we've talked a little bit in the past about what's going on, and I'm excited to have him on here. And it's just me. So I say us, and I mean Matt and I. Mitch is, everybody knows, he mentioned before, he's having surgery this week. So our best wishes go out to him. He's just got to get some stuff done before then. And Tim is still with some softball stuff. And Fred joins us when he can, when he's not very busy. So, you guys just get me and Matt tonight, which is exciting, but you know, it's good. It'll be good. Hey, Matt, how's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good. Going good. Busy. Right in the middle of a move, but just got my internet back up, so at my house. So everything's good right now. As long as I have internet and cable for World Cup, I'm happy.
Uh-oh. Hey. So yeah, there you are.
Okay.
You said you were bragging about having internet and cable, and then all of a sudden you froze.
Yeah, well, it is Cox Communications. Sometimes they have issues.
I just found it to be, I mean, we've been talking now for a couple minutes getting ready for the show, and it wasn't until you mentioned it that you...
I hope my cable didn't go out for my World Cup that's recording.
I don't know. Do you want to check it?
I watch it on demand if I have to, if that works. Right.
Like, I will have my soccer.
Yes, I've been looking forward to that for a while, so...
Yeah.
But it's backseat to all the work that's been going on. So, of course, always busy with the day-to-day things, just like you. Same stuff you do. Keeps us busy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are busy. Busy, busy. So, I'm glad you can come and join us and just hang out. And what's going on new with you?
Well, new is just some things I've been working on. You know, I guess we'll do it first, I guess.
Hey, Matt. Okay. So, Matt comes back and joins us. So I have been just working on some new stuff. I was in the Bay Area yesterday hanging out for a printer install. And Matt's back. Hey, how's it going?
Oh,
nope, took a little Matt's still quick. Gone. This is going to... things will work out well. I was in the Bay Area this yesterday. Got back last night. So it was a quick day trip down, day trip back. We did that. Are you doing okay there, Matt?
Yes. Gotta love it. I'll be placing a phone call to Cox Technical Support very shortly.
I just think it's funny. I mean, it's I don't know what it is, but
well, you know, this happened at my other house, and they told me it was a problem on the pole that my internet would drop off once in a while. And I said, "Well, you're gonna fix it, right?" Oh, it's been fixed, and was never fixed. So now I moved, and thinking, "Oh, good, I'm on a different area. The problem on the pole, their default excuse for everything, will go away." And apparently, either the pole followed me, or it's a different issue. So,
did you bring over the same hardware with you? I mean, did you move, say, with Cox to Cox Cable?
I stayed with Cox. I brought the same modem, but they've changed a modem before at my other house. They've changed it. So,
have you said anything to them lately to make them mad at you?
Well, yes, but that's a different story.
Well, I'm just we got to find a similarity here somewhere.
I did, because they made me mad when they stood me up for my appointment.
Oh. What, you couldn't wait between the hours of 8 a.m. to 2 p.m.? That was.
No, it was, the whole thing was scheduled, and it was scheduled for, I think it was on a Friday from 3 to 5 p.m., and I called them at 4:30. They weren't there yet. I'm saying, just calling to make sure that someone is still going to be here between 3 and 5. It's 4:30, and, you know, they do their little typing thing, and she says, well, it looks like the transfer has already been completed. I said, well, it can't be completed because I still have no service. The wires are still dangling outside of my house, and I have no cable, internet, or phone. So it's not, no one's been here. So she types some more, and she says, oh, it looks like it's scheduled for tomorrow between 8 and 10 a.m. I said, okay, well, first of all, how can you tell me on the other screen you saw that it's been completed, and now you type, and now it's scheduled for tomorrow? I said, it was never scheduled for tomorrow. It was scheduled today between 3 and 5. Oh, we don't show that, sir. I'm like, I know you don't show it. I said, but this explains why I'm waiting here by myself, and it explains why my other house hasn't had service since Wednesday, because y'all did something to cut it off over there, and now you're going to turn it on tomorrow. So it was a mess, and I was fussing at them. for a while. They gave me movie channels free for 2 years and reduced my bill. I said, that's all great, but I'm still took off a half a day of work to wait here, and I have to come back tomorrow. And that's actually the same time my movers were coming at 8 o'clock in the morning. So I kind of had to deal with all that. Then they screwed up the Saturday morning deal as well. So, yeah, I probably did make them mad.
Well, I find that interesting because, you know, I was just talking about my Palo Alto trip. And so it sounds like we both have been dealing with us being the client for somebody else. And they say, we're going to do this. And we expect them to do that because as business owners, we have people who expect us to do a certain thing. And so we work really hard to make sure that they are satisfied. But then when the tides turn and we are now clients waiting for somebody else and they don't provide the service that we would expect and we ourselves would provide, we kind of sit back and go, why is this? Why can't you provide service that is at least at a standard that everybody else should expect to have, that my clients expect?
Yeah, a few people do. And then also the same similar way when I'm working with another vendor for a client and that vendor is not doing their part. So we're waiting on them because the customer has no idea who's at fault, but I know I'm waiting. They said this, now they're not doing it, so I can't do my part. Yeah, I find that service from other people is usually lacking.
Yeah. Yeah. It does get frustrating because you say, you know, and in that situation where you're working with a vendor and you're kind of the middleman, you are being represented. I mean, you can't do your job. And so the customer just sees that the whole thing is on you when it's not really on you. It's on them. And so you're trying to make yourself not look bad and trying to make and get them running, but you have to, it is frustrating.
And on the phone with Cox, they said, well, so you don't have to wait around between 8 and 10. We're going to call your cell phone 15 minutes before the technician comes. That way you can go at the last minute. I said, great. Here's my cell phone number. I said, so let's review what's going to happen. And this is a supervisor because I already asked for a supervisor long ago. Okay, so we're going to be out there between 8 and 10. He's going to call you 15 minutes prior on this phone number. I said, great. Here's my problem. I don't have a high level of confidence that this is actually going to work out this way because you originally told me 3 to 5 today, and you have no record of that. I said, so about that, I got a message that it was going to be recorded for quality assurance. I need you to go back and listen to that conversation because nowhere was it mentioned Saturday 8 to 10. It was always Friday 3 to 5. Oh, yes, sir. We'll check that. Yes, sir. So, of course, Saturday morning comes. I get a phone call about 9 from Cox saying the technician's on his way. I thought, wow, they didn't screw it up. I drive to the new house. The guy sitting in the driveway. He said, I've been waiting here for an hour. I was like, I'm sorry you waited for an hour. You were supposed to call me before you came. He said, I've been calling for an hour. I said, what phone number are you calling? And I said, that's the wrong phone number. I said, you're supposed to call this number. He showed me his, I said, there's supposed to be a note that says to call this number. He showed me his notes. He showed me the work order. Nowhere on there was there the right phone number. So when I'm talking to him, Cox calls me back on my right phone number saying, sir, the Cox technician has been waiting for you or you're not there. I said, look, don't act like this is my fault. The technician was waiting because you screwed up. He doesn't have the right phone number. You apparently have the right phone number, but the tech doesn't. So yes, I'm here now, but this is not my fault. This is your screw up again. I said, so thank you for the call, and I hung up. So yeah, I probably did make him mad. But every along the way they screwed up and they left my phones didn't work. I don't know, it's just been a mess.
Wow.
Disappointing. And now my internet drops off once in a while apparently.
Oh, no. Shh, not so loud.
Yeah, I know.
All right. So what? Well, let's go back to what you've been working on.
And you might find this pertinent because I have a lot of business clients. That's mainly what we do. So if a client calls me saying my internet's down, okay, what do you have to do? You have to go, okay, who's your internet provider? What's the phone number? What's your account number? Because you got to call the ISP and open a case. And I have this a lot of times. Somebody needs to add a new address in the network scanner. Okay, what's the IP of the scanner? What's the login for the scanner? You know, all that kind of stuff. So I said, there's no easy way to document this stuff. So I sat down and I designed a bunch of forms for techs to use to be able to document this stuff. Router settings, just a bunch of forms. They're PDF fillable. So you can go in there on your computer, fill it out. Yeah, fill it out, save it as, you know, client X, router, wherever, main office or whatever. So you can go in there, you can see the login for, you can see the IP address, you can see the WAN info, WAN IP, all the information you need about the router. Okay. Then I have one for, you know, like network printer. Of course, you have more than one network printer. You just save it out and save it as that printer, right? So Savin printer front office or something like that. So anyway, they're just, cause I needed a way to be able to better document this stuff because I'm tired of trying to hunt down information.
Yeah.
To do something. Now, a byproduct of this, of these forms, is that you can take these forms and use them as a baseline of everything you need to document when you go into a client's office. So you start with the, say, router form. Hey, I need to document all this. So it's like a way to pretty much map out everything you could need for the client. All the network information, the router information, the ISP, domain name. You know, how many times does a domain name expire because somebody forgot to renew it? Nobody documented when it was going to expire or what the login for GoDaddy was or something like that.
Right.
So all these are, you can use for discovery to be able to document everything you could possibly need. And a lot of it's reminder stuff. So you might not remember to document who the DNS provider is or what the name registrar is for your domain name. And if the client doesn't know, this is a good way to get down there and document. Because what happens when you ask the client, where's your domain name registered? What? I don't know. Who are we talking about? They have no clue. So this is a way.
Just give you your domain. Yeah. Well, no, it's www.whatever.com. Well, who's the registrar of it? Well, I think we own it.
Right. Who do you pay for it? I mean, it's not like a toaster you go buy and it's yours. I mean, you pay somebody for this. Somebody manages domain name for you.
Right. And usually it was, upper administration. Somebody just bought it with a company credit card and, all right, that's all we need to do. My job's done. And they kind of, forget it from there.
Yeah, they pay for 3 years and they have no clue after that.
Right.
The email that they associated with it is long gone. So the reminders to renew it are gone. No one's getting those. I mean, I see that all the time. I have clients that have lost domain names because they didn't know when it expired. And I thought they managed it because they never mentioned it to us. But yeah. This is the kind of thing where, okay, the form, domain name form. Let's talk about your domain name. Who's it registered with? And if they don't know, as a tech, this is a billable service, especially doing discovery for a new client. This is all billable time. So it's a way that you can bill them and you document everything. So it's easier for you to find the information when you need it. And like I said, some of it's a reminder, like the switch form. You know, people think, well, it's just a switch. Yeah, but if it's what's the name? What kind of switch? How many ports? Does it have PoE? And it's like a box that says on UPS. Well, that's not really important on UPS. Well, it's not important, but what it's there for is to remind you to check for that. Mm-hmm. And if it's not on the UPS, hey, you know what? You can sell the client a UPS. Because it should be on a UPS, right? They might have a switch plugged in. This is a point where power could blink, the switch gets messed up. Now they have no network connectivity. Had a UPS on it, this would be avoided. Like the hardware will have a little checkbox that says pictures on file. People have asked me, why does it say pictures on file? Picture of what? How many times do you walk people through stuff on the phone? Hey, unplug the switch. What's it look like? Now, I don't know about you. I can't remember what every switch in every office looks like.
Yep.
Well, where is it? Oh, God, I don't remember. Is it under the router? Is it on the shelf? I mean, I have no idea. Right. Yep. You set this stuff up. You take pictures. You keep it in the client folder. Now you can. It's like you're there looking at it.
Yeah.
Okay. You see that red box? Look below it. It says HP ProCurve switch. You see it? Oh yeah. Now I see it. Wasn't that easy? Because you could say, no, it's a box with a bunch of network cables going into it. What's a network cable?
But you could also take that picture, right? And you could. Can you pull that picture out of there or screenshot it, crop it, whatever, and send it to them and say, you're looking for this right here.
Yeah, you could. You could text it to them. Yeah. Yeah. But it's so much easier. I find pictures of a client setup are so much easier to have when you're trying to walk somebody through remotely.
Yeah.
Because you don't necessarily want to get in your car and drive across town because the person can't understand what the router is.
Yeah.
You don't remember. Well, where is it? I don't know. Was it in the back closet or was it in this room? If you have pictures, you can easily see where it is. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of thing. It's some of it's reminders, some of it's to help technicians do their job better.
Yeah. Yeah. What I have is on each of my clients, I just have a long, document. And usually it has, at the very top, it has the client's name, if they have any static IP addresses or at least the DHCP address at the time. And then I talk about, the WAN, the LAN, and then I start with, routers and printers and document it and stuff. The problem I run into, and that works for me, but here's the problem I run into and why I'm thinking, I should be switching over to something as you, is that when I go and I do a site survey for the first time, and I sit down and I'm like, great, and I have to tell myself, okay, don't forget to write this down. Don't forget to write that down. Don't forget to write this down, because inevitably I will forget 1, 2, 5 of those things that I come back. I start creating my document. I copy and paste from an old one. I start monitoring, messing with it and looking at it and changing things up. And I go, oh, I forgot, I don't even know what this is. And I forget, or I don't know what that is. Where your document, if you're going to have the document, you may not fill everything out, but at least it's reminders, because you could take those documents and say, oh, that's right. I need this and I need that and I need this. And if you don't need it, skip it. But at least you have something there that reminds you to, you have something there to fill in the blank.
Yeah. Like there's a form for wireless access points. You might be looking at the servers and forget all about the wireless access mm-hmm. points.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You have wireless? Okay. Let's look at those. What's the SSID? What's the password? What type of encryption? So they're there to, like I said, remind you definitely of what you need to fill out. And there's some like a line of business application form, important programs that the company is running. You might forget to ask them, what programs are you running? I'm running Peachtree. Do you have, so you can fill out a form for Peachtree. Here it's Peachtree version 2013. Here's the serial number. Here's a pertinent information on how to install it. Here's where the data is for Peachtree. It's got a section like, I think, is the data backed up? Or is it important? Where is it backed up? How is it backed up? Just how is it backed up? How is it restored? Because some programs have specialized backup and restore procedures inside the program.
Right.
Not just backup exec. You can't just store a flat file. They may have a process to do that. So stuff like that. And I think there's like 17 forms or 18 forms that are there to remind you what to fill out or help you document it. Now the site is www.informedit.net. I was lucky that domain name was available. It's a short domain, informedit.net. Now the forms are normally $40. I think I have them on sale for down to 30 right now. So it's like less than $1 something a form.
I forgot. I couldn't type it in right, so it took me a while.
Informed IT. Yeah, so it's informing IT. So it's a form. Seems like a play on words. I thought it was pretty clever. Of course, I'm not a designer or anything.
The site right now has your forms for it's $30, and at least that's what it is. And looks like you have a sale.
Yeah, they're $40 normally. I put them on sale for $30 for the first month, I think. So I think it's got a few weeks left on that.
Yeah, it ends the 20th of next 20th. Month.
Oh, okay. Oh, good. Okay.
So you got a while.
Yeah.
Don't buy it right now.
I wanted to do a month from when I actually started talking about it. I don't think I've ever mentioned. This is actually the first time I've ever mentioned in the forums to anyone. Is on Geeksters, the premiere.
The premiere. Geeksters, hear it first. All right. So you got things like router, switch, wireless access point, NAS, ISP, domain, passwords. That's a great one to have because how many times you go, I don't know what the password is. Remote access overview, satellite office, physical server, and it says, and more to come as needed. So it sounds like maybe if I needed one for something, you could help build one or?
Yeah, I can help. Now, I did all the ones that I have out as based on what I use.
Yeah.
So there may be companies out there who need to document something over and over again, that things that I just didn't use. If I get requests saying, hey, what about this? I can definitely add that. Now, if I get some request that I find is unique to one person, we can talk about custom. I do custom forms too. So if someone has a custom form they want designed, I can work with them to create a custom form. Now, a custom form may not be in the pack because it may be, I might find it too specific. I try to make these generic enough to where they'll fit any network. Like a lot of them have a notes section, or most of them, I think all of them have a notes section. And that's because there may be something specific about your router or your switch where there might not be an exact match to the form for that specific setting. Mm-hmm. That's what the notes are for.
But really, a lot of the stuff. So you have a free one right above where you can see what forms are there. It looks like there's a free one. It says click here for one of the router forms, and it's actually the router form, and it has different boxes: router hardware, LAN info, WAN info, router administration, username, password, and then the read password and the write password. So a lot of times, depending on the switches, you have a guest access or a router, you have a guest access or you have an admin access. Then managed by third party. So if there's a third party that router software, and then notes. And then you have, of course, your picture on file, and it is all just fillable, and it's easy just to write that stuff in when you're on site, come home, come back to your office, and hand it off to somebody, your kids. Here, type this up for me. I'll give you $1 per page. Yeah.
Or if you have your notebook, you just type it and write in your notebook while you're there, too. Or you could print them and fill it out. But Yeah, I mean, I wanted something that could be reproducible. So if I give it my text, I can just say, oh, let me just fill the router form out. I want all this information. So they'll know, okay, I got it. They won't forget, oh, I forgot to get the DHCP scope. Right. Well, it's there in the form. You can't forget it now.
Right. And by having some kind of a form, because really, you know, I've been looking at hiring somebody and I have to change kind of the ways I do it because it's worked for me, but that's, you know, as a one person, as a single shop, that's a different when you have to, when you have employees. This is a way to have consistency. And really, for business, you have to have consistencies, especially with employees and especially with people working with you and for you. Because if it's, there is no consistency, then you're going to spend a whole lot of time and energy just trying to figure out how things go, because you need to be able to, you know, because Matt, if you need to step into one of your techs, you know, one of the jobs that they've already done, you need to be able to know exactly where the documentation is every time.
And that's exactly why this is done, because somebody will help set up an ISP for some satellite office somewhere over one of our clients, and they've worked with the ISP to get it going, and then they have a problem with the ISP. And I have to figure out who the ISP is for that office. If it's not documented, it's going to take me a lot longer to figure out who to call for that ISP. So it makes us look bad, one, because I don't know what's going on. Who do you have for an ISP? Well, y'all set it up. Well, yes, us as a company, but not me personally.
Right.
Oh, wait, yes, it's not documented. So who do you pay? Well, I don't know who I pay. Well, let's find the bills. You got to have a bill for an ISP. Let's, you know, so it takes the process is a lot longer. And it doesn't make us look very organized if we have to ask them, who's your ISP?
Right.
And so I found that you find a lot of things when you're filling these forms out. Upload and download speed. Hey, you know, you're only on a 5 meg plan. You know that? Oh, I thought we had better than that. No, you're getting they may be getting 5 megabyte download when you go to test, but yet you call the ISP to get the information. They're paying for 50.
Right.
Okay. Well, here's a mismatch. You're paying for 50. You're getting 5. Let's investigate that. So as you're actually going through and filling these out, you will find things that the client was not aware of, which makes you look good because now you can say, look what I found, and here, we're going to take care of it and fix it. You didn't even know it was an issue. So I mean, I find the forms help me, and I'm hoping they help other techs, because if you're not organized and if you're not informed about the network, you really can't support it that good.
Informed
IT. You really can't help that much, or you can help, but it's going to take a lot longer and you won't look as good. If your client calls you, hey, this is going on, what's the wireless access password? You can pull it up like that, you look a lot better. Oh, yeah. I don't know, let me remote into your network, or let me log into the access point, let me find out, oh, okay, here it is, there you go. That takes a lot longer than just looking at your form. And let me tell you a byproduct of this, especially the pictures, is that you know how you left it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you took a picture of it and you were done, and port 1 on the switch was plugged into the port 2 on the router, and you're walking a client through that? No, it goes to port 4. It wasn't supposed to go to port 4. When I left it, it was plugged in port 2. So what happened? Oh, yeah. We might have unplugged that to test. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've had that happen many times. Okay, well, it's not supposed to be in port 4. So because it's documented, I know it's changed.
Right.
So they're telling me we didn't change anything. Oh, but yeah, it's plugged in the wrong port. So somebody did something. Let's look back and look what changed. Jimmy was over here. Okay, let's get Jimmy back over here. You know, so the pictures and documentation are lifesavers sometimes to help you figure out things. So check out the router form. If that's, I think, the form that would help the most. Everybody's got a router. Home users, business users, everybody's got a router. I mean, that's the form I think everybody can use. So I made that one free just to check it out, see if that's something that they like. Everybody wants to try before you buy. So give it a try. See if you like it.
It's a first one's free.
first one and only one. Yeah, I mean, and I've had people say, I'm just going to make my own forms. Well, that's fantastic. It's great. I'm all for that. But, you know, I made them. I might as well see if other people want them. And it took me a while to create these forms. I guess if you want to sit down and make the forms and you have time for that, I would have bought the forms if somebody had them. Because it just took me hours and hours and hours.
Well, and that's what, you know, as techs, you know, we do have a tendency to kind of go, this is mine over here. You can't have it because I spent a lot of time on it. When really we need to be able to say, here's what I made. I really hope somebody else can do this. Now, I would like to be compensated for it because, you know, it did take time away from your business. It did probably take time away from some family stuff, maybe even some soccer. I don't know, you know, but.
Did not take away from soccer.
Then never mind. It didn't take away from soccer. Matt's like, forget it. I'm going to do this some other time. But, you know, $30 for all these forms.
And they're of course, they're reusable. Use them for all your clients. I mean, I wanted to be fair. I think $30 or $40 is fair, but launching price of $30, I think, is even better for some people. So,
yeah.
I mean, I sent them to you. Did you like them?
I did. Yeah, I hinted earlier that Matt and I kind of went back and forth talking about these, and I looked at them, and haven't had a chance to. I've looked at them, went through them, and I said, you know, these look really good, and now what I need to do is I just need to sit down, maybe not watch baseball, sit down and start importing all my stuff over there, because while it's going to take some time for me to do that, in the long run, it's going to be a lot easier, and it's going to be easier for me to share it out. It's going to be easier for any of my employees to just find out what it is, where it is, and it's going to be easier for me to find out what it is and where it is, and have some level of consistency.
Now, as a personal preference, I choose to fill these forms out and save them on my network, not the client's network.
Yes.
I mean, this is information I gather to help me support my client. I mean, if it's your choice if you want to give these to your clients. Of course, that makes them easier to hand them off to somebody else. You know what I did need these for? I did use one form. I had a client that, I don't know if you ever had this. They were trying to get certified, ISO certified, I think.
Okay.
And they had to have a disaster recovery plan. They asked me, can you write a disaster recovery plan? I said, well, I've never written a disaster recovery plan before. But I actually used these to help me create them.
Nice. You didn't just give them a zip drive?
No, they wanted all kind of documentation and forms, and I mean, they wanted all this. We want all the inventory. They wanted a bunch of stuff. So, I filled these out and helped them, and they were like, "Oh, this is great. Thank you. That's what we're looking for." There you go.
Perfect. I mean,
they paid for them because they paid for my time to fill them out, but I did give them the information because they paid me for it. So,
yeah,
which is different than filling it out on your own time and then giving it to them. But that's a text preference. I'm sure you don't share all your documentation with your clients that you document their networks, do you?
No.
Yeah.
No. I will give some of them to them, just because sometimes there's some passwords and stuff that they don't have to remember, and here you go. But really, I may give them a revised version of what I have, just so they don't feel. I feel like if I give them too much, then that's information that they can use to go and tweak with stuff. You get that one guy who goes in there, one lady who goes in there and says, oh, this says port 1 and port 4. Something's not working. So if I unplug this from here, I wonder if I can get it to work, when it has nothing to do at all with that. And now they have some information. They think they can run with it. So.
Yes. Well, how does the saying go? A little bit of learning is a dangerous thing.
Yes.
Commonly misquoted as a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, but learning is a dangerous thing. Yeah, I give all my clients, I make sure they have the administrative username and password for the server or for the domain and for the router. Other than that, because it's their equipment, I want them, if they do leave or if we get hit by a bus, they should have that. From that login information, any other tech should be able to go in and do their own discovery.
Yeah.
They got to do their own work. I think doing the work and doing the discovery really helps you to understand the network and how they run. So
yeah, no, I agree. So informedit.net, check it out. Get those forms. They're on sale. Get them now while they're still hot.
That's right. They're hot. And if anybody and if somebody has recommendations to change the form, I mean, there's a contact form on the webpage. There's an email address on the webpage. Send me an email. These are my initial forms, the way I use them, but I'm very open to making changes or improvements. Somebody sends me a suggestion and I agree, I will definitely update those forms.
Nice. When you buy the forms, you just get the forms. You're not keeping a list of everybody who is buying the forms, are you?
Well, there's a thing on there that says that where you can put your email address in. And there's a thing that says join mailing list. That mailing list will I've never designed a website, so my thought process, the join the mailing list will be, if I update the forms, I'll send an email out how to get the new forms, the updated forms.
So do people who purchase the forms, do they get upgrades in?
If they join the mailing list, they're going to get any updates, because I'll send a mass email out saying, hey, here's the updates, here's how you download the new forms.
Got it.
So yeah, click on join mailing list. Now, you'll have to put your email address in to get the link for the forms when you buy them, but if you don't click join mailing list, you won't be included in the email when new forms are released. And any new forms that are released, if you're on the mailing list, you'll get them for free because you'll get the email.
Got it. So I'm looking at where that mailing list is.
I think it's when you go check out.
Oh, okay. So you have to you purchase them.
Yeah, when you go to checkout, there's a when you're filling out the stuff, it says join mailing list on that last checkout screen.
There it is. Yes.
So if you check that, I'm gonna send out mass email. I'll send an email when and how to get the new forms when they're updated.
Okay. So you just can't put my name in there and just say join mailing list without giving you my billing information?
I don't know.
Nope, it doesn't. Your name's required. I thought, well, maybe.
Yeah. So I didn't test that. I didn't test that, Martin. I just tested.
As if the $10 off isn't free. I want more. Give me an inch. I'll take a mile.
Yeah.
Or sometimes two, depending on how greedy I am. No, that's cool. I'm going to have to go ahead and start moving my stuff over that. It's gonna make it a whole lot easier to be able to just find the stuff, and when I go on site, to fill out the forms, fill out what I need. That's a great idea. And you know, you took something that you needed and wanted to share it with everybody else, and I think it's a win-win.
Cool. So you were telling me about some stories you had.
Oh yeah, yeah. So this last story, the Palo Alto. So what happened was one of my clients, they had these old kind of copier, scanner, faxer, printer, you know, the ginormous like business one, stapler, you know, Canon sells them. Everybody has, you know, if you've been in a big environment, you've usually seen these kind of giant monsters of devices. Well, this company has a location up here in Portland, and they have a location in Palo Alto, and they were going to replace both of them, get them both out and go with brand new ones. And so we said, yeah, let's do that. They asked me what I thought of them, and they looked really good. They staple, they collate, they do, you know, they do everything. They, you know, fax. And one of the biggest things was they do scanning to SMB shares so they can scan to the network folder. And that was, that's one of the things they wanted too, because a lot of times they'll do that. So we set up a date for the gentleman to come out, take a site survey. He looked at it and said, all right, let's go ahead and work on some dates. And we gave him kind of some dates we could go with the Portland office, because the plan was to do an install in the Portland office. And then I would know how to do stuff. And then I would remotely help and set up the Palo Alto office. And I'm in Portland, Oregon, so Palo Alto's Southern Bay Area. If I was to drive there, it would take me, oh my gosh, it would probably take me about 12 hours to drive. Oh, wow. So it's about an hour and a half flight from here. So it does cost some money to go down. And so I didn't want to just frivolously spend company money if I can do things remotely. So we go ahead and we start getting stuff set up for, when we're going to scan get the printer installed, and we signed on the dotted line, and then it all just kind of went downhill from there. We're going to schedule a time to come out and deploy this date. Well, no, that's not going to work for us because of, you know, these problems. And okay, what days do work? Well, these days work. Great. We'll schedule it this day. No, that's not one of the dates that we need to schedule. Okay. Then could you tell us again what day works? Sure. How about this day? Yes. That Friday works great. Couple days before then, are we scheduled to Friday? Because I don't remember, says the rep. Like, yes, we're scheduled for Friday. I will be there. Please come. Okay. So then they show up, and the truck shows up, and we're like, great. Yay, they're here to do it. And they come in, the tech comes in, and the mover guy and the tech comes in, and they're like, all right, here we go. And they do everything. We said, okay, so is the address book already put in there? Because, you know, we had all the address book and the scans and faxes. And he goes, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. Like, it's on the work order that you're supposed to schedule this and do it. So he's like, well, okay, so let's go ahead and we do this. So we get the Konica stuff, it's a Kyocera is what we had. We're going to remove that one and put the Samsung. Well, the two databases don't talk to each other, so we had to do some kind of a converter to a CSV file. And then he's looking at 191 entries, and he says, well, I'm going to go do it over the weekend. Well, as all this was happening and a couple of days before that, we were having some network issues down in the Bay Area. So they said, Martin, we're going to go ahead and we're going to send you down there. For that way, at least you can be down there, check out the network, check out what's going on, and also just be there for the scanner, for the printer install. Okay. So over the weekend, he's doing that. Yesterday morning, I catch a plane. You know, I got to get up at 3. I'm at the airport at 4, catch a 5 o'clock flight, or, you know, almost 6 o'clock flight, fly down there, land. 9 o'clock rolls around and the phone rings. Okay, excellent. It's the people going to deliver the printer. And they said, we'd like to schedule a time to come out and deliver the printer. He said, all right, we'll be here all day. You know, do you have an estimate? Because our IT guy's got to fly back to Portland. And he says, oh no, we're just calling to schedule a time, not to actually deliver it like we were supposed to.
We're calling the reschedule.
Right. And it was like, really? So the guy there says, no, you will come install this today. It has to be done. You know, our IT guy has flown down here to do this. And they said, well, you know, we're going to have some issues because the truck that we normally deliver our stuff in is being used by the owner of the company to take his kid to school.
See,
and won't be,
I wouldn't have
and won't
said
be available
that.
For 2 days.
Yeah, I would have said our truck is not available or, right. You know, what I wouldn't actually say that. That's not very professional.
No. And so all I hear is the other guy say, then find one and rent it. So,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know if we can. He says, then just, I don't care if you have to push it here. Get it here. Well, okay, hold on. And then I hear him come back online and they're like, okay, well, we're going to bring it in the Suburban. So apparently they use somebody's personal vehicle to deliver this copier and it comes apart. And so they were able to fit it in there. But so they show up. Now they can't take the old one away because they don't have a truck. And you know, they got the new one set up and the tech was really nice and we got everything moved over and, you know, I ended up, they only have 31 addresses. So it's like, well, I'm going to do it manually because it's going to take me longer to try to rip them out and convert it than it would be just to sit there and just type them in manually via a web interface.
Yep.
They said, well, we'll be able to get this old copier out on Wednesday. Will that be fine? Yeah, that's going to be fine. No problem. And then as he's leaving, he's like, you know, it may not be Wednesday. It may be Thursday or Friday. It may even be next week.
Maybe whenever we remember to do it.
Right. So now they've got the new copier there taking up space. And this isn't a very big office. You know, they've got the new copier there taking up space. They've got the old copier there taking up more space because this thing is huge. And so everybody's kind of shuffling around and I'm in there with them and we're all kind of dancing to try to, you know, be in the same spot together. And it all went in together, but it just felt like, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, you sign on the dotted line and they're like, well, we have your money. We have your signature. We'll now just take our time.
But that's the point where you stop talking to sales and started talking to service.
Well, that'd be nice, except our service rep, yeah, he went on vacation.
Yeah, see, sales, the salespeople always have a can-do attitude. Yes, 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 no problem, whatever. And once they sell it, they're done. Oh, no, they talk to these guys.
Right.
And those guys aren't as can-do as the sales guys, you know. So there's always a disconnect between the salespeople and the actual people who are going to do the work.
Right. So we got the stuff put in, you know, that I came in today to visit them. So my flight was really, I flew down at 6 o'clock yesterday morning and I flew back at 6-7 o'clock last night. I made it for a long day. I showed up there this morning about 9 o'clock to talk to them and they said, well, we have the address book in. The gentleman, the IT guy, their tech guy was over yesterday and he said, I have everything put in, but it's just not right. You know, a lot of times in the Samsung, you can create a profile and under the profile, you can have the name, you know, the fax, the, you know, the SMB information and everything, the email address. And so you just have a profile for a user. And then depending on what you choose on the printer, it either pulls the SMB information or the fax information or the email information. And so what happens now is we have, you know, user one, fax, user two, email, user, you know, user two, SMB. And so we have three different lines, you know, three different basically profiles for one person. And it just looks messy because he really didn't spend time. And the guy even admitted, he says, I didn't have a whole lot of time to do all this correctly. So I did it, but you know, so I'm basically, I didn't work on it over the weekend because I was told, you know, cause he told me to me face to face that he's going to go ahead and do this. And now the weekend rolls around and it's Tuesday and it's working, but it's not perfect. So that's what I'm going to be working on tonight is taking all of that data and compiling it and making it into, you know, into one, re-importing it back in, overwriting everything else. But it's just
now these locations. Are there servers here doing DHCP? Is there a network?
Both have networks. One has a server doing DHCP, and the other one is just a standalone. So they're just on a work group.
I have found that all the copier, network, printer, scanner companies that I deal with, they are very confused when the network has a server. They just draw a blank. Most of the calls I get like this are, they're here delivering a new network printer and they need help right now. Okay. I was just taking a nap anyway, I guess, during the day. I can stop what I'm doing and help you.
I've got nothing else to do. I'm so glad you called. I was really, really bored.
I mean, I love it that they don't think that they need to call us, that they're getting a replacement network scanner copier. They call us. He's here now. Okay. I can do it now. There's no problem. It'd just be the priority rate. Wait, the what? Yeah, the priority rate. What's that? The I want help right now rate?
Right.
Well, why would I have to pay
like
that?
The weekend wait, it's kind of like the weekend rate, but just a little bit more.
Right. Why have to pay that? I said, because you're calling me for service now. Obviously, this was planned. I mean, you didn't just order this network scanner printer 5 minutes ago, did you? I mean, no, this was planned. I said, so now I have other jobs that have to be put back, and I'm going to bump to the front. That's what the priority rate is. I guess so. You know, well, I mean, it doesn't matter to me either way.
I can see you next Tuesday just as easy for me.
Yeah, I mean, we can schedule it. That's fine. I scheduled the other jobs. That's what I'm working on today. But if you want to bump ahead, that's what the priority rate is for. It's priority. So a lot of them complain about that. But I said, next time, if you're getting a new network scanner, a copier, or anything that attaches to the network, you might want to call us and see if we need to be involved. Because normally we do need to be involved. And I have found that these network scanner printer techs, they just don't understand networks. They say, well, we're not network technicians. Okay, then you shouldn't be selling a network scanner and copier.
Yeah.
Sell one that plugs into the back of a computer. Because if you're doing a network scanner copier, you have to understand networking. But they don't. And none of them do, at least the ones I've always dealt with. And it's not just one company. And where I live, there's like 4, 5, 6 companies that do this. They all have the same problem. They say, we're not network technicians.
Right.
Okay. Well, then you need to tell your customer to have a network technician available when you're coming.
Right. And this guy knew what he was talking about, so I felt that was nice that he did that. And we actually have a big company up here called Pacific Office Automation. And they used to do just selling and leasing of the copier scanner stuff. But now they have actually moved into IT support. So you will actually get, you know, a guy who knows, you know, okay, I need the IP address, the gateway, the DHCP, the DNS. I need to know what's the domain name. What's the, you know, do you have a username and password to join this to the domain? Like he, you know, what's the SMTP information so I can email out, you know, and so he will, what's nice is he will ask for things like that if you get that company to come out and do that.
Yeah.
But what happens with that? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
What we get is, oh yeah, I gave us a static IP address. Now I'm getting IP conflicts. Well, who gave you a static IP address to use? Well, I just picked one. Oh, okay. Yeah, I just picked one. That's good. And I tell them, no, we want to put it on a DHCP reservation because I don't like static. I'd rather do a reservation so I can see in the server who it's reserved to. Oh, we don't like doing that. Okay, why? Let's discuss it. Why don't you like doing that? Because we always have. They say, oh, we always want the same IP address. Okay, well, you will. That's what the reservation's for. But no, we want it static. Well, it's static because you always get this reservation. You always get the same one. They don't understand what a DHCP reservation is. They just pick one.
Right.
And they want to know why it's not working. Well, because you took one that was in the scope and somebody else is using it. That's why it's not working.
You actually pointed to the same IP address as my Exchange server. So now you've really created a whole lot of big mess. And I just want to thank you for that because I really needed somebody to get mad at today. And you win.
And, you know, I can tell before they call us that the technicians telling the customer, oh, their network is messed up. I don't know what happened. And so they call us thinking that we messed up. No, who gave you this IP address? So I have to tell the client, no, they gave it the wrong IP address because they didn't ask which one to use. They just picked the number out of their head and that's what they use. I mean, that's the problem.
Right.
And of course, the customer's like, well, who do I believe? I'm like, I don't care who you believe. I mean, this one needs to happen to have it done correctly. So let's get it done correctly. Let's undo what you did and let's do it correctly. Yeah. Or they say, oh, you have an Exchange server. I don't know how to set that up on here. We usually use Gmail outgoing mail servers. Okay, well, we're not going to do that. They have an Exchange server. Yeah. So we're going to set up the email through the Exchange server. Well, we don't know how to do that. I said, okay, fine. I'll figure out how to program your device. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I learned a lot yesterday because I was I was down there and got a chance to just kind of play with it and tweak with it and mess with it. And I was like, oh, I know how to do a lot of this stuff because they give training to the end users. And the end users know how to scan, how to fax, you know, how to make copies, how to double site, how to staple, how to, you know, I don't want to know how to staple. I don't need to know how to staple. But I need to know how to make sure that when you send it via email, it gets out and it doesn't bounce back. And it, you know, and when you scan it to your folder, it gets to the folder on the shares and it goes to the right spot and it, you know, authenticates correctly. That's my job.
Right. Yeah. I want to know what IP address is on. I want to know how to log into it. I want to make sure the settings are right.
Right.
That's all I don't know. Yeah. That's the same thing with programs. When I install a program, I don't need to know how to use SolidWorks. I don't need to know how to use AutoCAD. Right. I just need to know how to install it, how it's licensed, and where the data is. That's all. I don't need to know anything else. If the program opens, I'm done.
Yep.
I'm not going to train you on how to do a drawing. I'm not going to train you on how to do your accounting. I can install it and I can make sure the data is backed up. That's my job. I mean, because we can't be expected to learn every software package or how to do the inner workings or technical of every copy or printer. We don't do that. At least I don't do that.
No, I've been trying, but I haven't been doing very well. So I've been still trying to do AutoCAD 101. No, I'm just kidding.
I tell them, you know, we don't do training, application training. I mean, if you need to learn how to use AutoCAD, I'm sure AutoCAD has resources on how to get you trained to use their product.
Yeah.
But it's not me.
Nope. Not me either. Not me either.
Oh, they'll buy some specific software package for their line of business, you know, veterinary clinic. Well, how do I do that? Yeah. You know what? I'm not a vet. I don't use the veterinary software. I can't help you.
Speaking of a vet, this happened to me just last week. I moved a database from, you know, a Windows XP machine to a Windows 7 machine. I worked with their techs. We moved the database. It worked. They did a sample x-ray while I was there. Everything worked great. X-ray showed up. Screen showed up. Images showed up. Everything. The next day, I get a call. Our x-ray machine's not working. Well, I know it was working yesterday, you know. Well, what happened was is they had changed the button, like how to take a picture. The button had changed. And so everybody was pointing to the old button. But when I was there working with the vet and actually one of the doctors, we had spoken and they said, from the information I learned like 2 minutes ago, you have to press this button here to take a picture. That's all I know. You press the button, the picture works, it comes up on the monitor and it has on the XP machine works and it logs on the domain and everybody gets happy. You know, the licensing's there. That's it. I know you press that button and cover anything important that you don't want radiated, you know. And then I get a call. It doesn't work. It worked the other day. And I said, well, did you press the, and I'm thinking in my head, did you press, 1, 2, 3, did you press the fifth one over that kind of looks like a camera? They're like, hold on. Oh, there, now it's working. I'm like, okay.
That wasn't all intuitive.
I know the tech and Dr. Such and Such, you know, I explained to him, this is all I know is that you have to make this one. And I kind of assumed it was going to get passed down the line and it didn't. So I think every tech is
the expert on that software because last time we had a problem with it, we called Martin. So let's call Martin again.
I know. I don't. The X-ray radiation is bouncing differently, Martin. I'm like, I don't know. I just make sure I got a lead vest on when I walk in there.
Yeah, my response is, look, we just need to keep your maintenance agreement with this company active so you can call support. Now, if you like, I can be on the phone with you when you call support. Of course, it's all billable time. And I'll just be the middleman between y'all if you prefer. If not, you can call them directly. But don't make any changes to the network or anything else without me. So,
No.
Change the data path, and now I'm not backing it up because you decide to make the data locally to test, and then you forget to move it back, which has happened plenty of times.
Yeah. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, I got a new toy in the other day, and I wanted to talk to you about it. So everybody has done if you've worked in networks and. Anything like that. And you get your little toner probe and sometimes you have a device at the end that, you know, you plug Cat5 in one side and you can go and you can tone it out and all that kind of stuff. This is the one that I have. It's a Paladin. I don't know. It was like $75 and it comes with a whole bunch of other stuff. It has the wire lights up and, you know, it's a normal toner, check for data, wiring and stuff. And I use it, not a lot, but it's not a great one. I've found that out. That it's definitely not the standard of toner probes. I've definitely used some ones that are higher up. So when I was in California a couple weeks ago, I was talking to a friend, and he said, "Hey, I got this new device, and you may be interested." I said, "Okay." So he talks to me about it, and he goes on and explains it. And I said, "Well, yeah, that kind of sounds like fun, but yeah, what am I going to do with that?" And then I was over at his house, and he says, "Hey, here, let me show it to you." And he shows it to me. And I was like, okay, this is pretty sweet. And it's a Fluke Link Splitter 200. I don't know if you guys can see that, but it's really simple. This is all it is. It has an Ethernet, so it's a box with an Ethernet on the bottom. You just plug cable in there. And on the front, you have a couple things. You have a lightning bolt. You have a link. It kind of looks like a chain link. You have one that says DHCP. The next one has a cloud and a little box. It's supposed to represent a switch. And then you have a cloud that is just a cloud. So when you turn it on, the first thing that lights up is the little link light. And what it's waiting for you to do, and it's waiting for you to take a Cat5 cable and plug it in. And then it starts going through this cycle. And it checks then the link. Does it get a link? Yes. Great. Does it get a DHCP? Yes. Okay. Then it moves up to the switch. And what it's probing for is if the switches respond to your to the device, it will actually, the switch will then report back, oh, that cable is on port such and such off the switch. The switches that I tested out were unmanaged, so they just, it didn't reply back. But I'm assuming on high-end managed ones, right, Matt, that they would, this should reply back and tell you, oh, that's on port 26.
Right.
Yeah. And then the next one up is the little cloud. And what that does is that actually pings out, and by default, it pings Google. Once this is all said and done, you get an email. You have to go to LinkSplitter and you set up, you sign up for your account, and you get an email with all of this information in it. It tells you how many retries it did, where it went, what the latency was, what cables and everything. So it's pretty cool in that aspect. Now, I think, well, this is, that's kind of cool, but what if you're at a site and the network is down, right? And that's why you have to something, you know, you're toning out something because there's a problem somewhere. Well, you hit the button one more time, and if you, I know people in the audio can't see it, but what happens is there's a light, there's a blue light that turns on top of it. It itself then becomes a wireless access point. So then you take your phone and you match it to this access point, and I think by default is 172.16.99. You run it, you run the same test in that, and now this is an access point, and it sends all the information to your phone. Can it get the link? What switch? What port? And stuff like that. So
that's cool. So it'll test if you have a cable coming somewhere. It just tests. It's testing to see if it's got connectivity. Does it have DHCP? Mm-hmm. Does it have connectivity?
Right. Right. Yeah. It gives me a whole, and it tells you what IP address you get. What is the gateway? What's the subnet? What's the DHCP? What's the DNS that it's getting from? So basically, it gets all the information back. If you were to do an ifconfig or an ipconfig on your computer, all that information you get back, this gets back and then sends it to you in an email, and then also to your phone if you want to get an email that way. But it sends it to you in an email right away. You can get it, and then you can save it, and it, you can export all this data out as a CSV file or a PDF. But I thought it was pretty cool that if you don't have internet for whatever reason, you can do it off your phone because this just becomes a hotspot. And it must do something else. I tested it with it, and it did go out and get me the Google information. So it must connect somehow.
Did you try plugging in like a cable from like a modem? And take unplug it from the router, plug in a WAN connector, like a Cox or a cable connection, see what happens?
I haven't done that.
I wonder if you could do that to see if like the internet was actually down or up.
Right. Well, it should
get. If it's up, well, it should give you a public IP and ping out.
Right, right. Well, and if it's most of them, like your new cable modems, will have a router in them, right? So this should get a router from that DHCP scope and then be able to go back out.
So at that point, you unplug it from your router, plug in your device, and that way it's. I'm just wondering if the internet's down. Is it the modem? Is it the router?
Right.
So you could bypass the router, plug the modem right into here. Because a lot of times, the ISP will say, look. Take your notebook and unplug your router, plug in your notebook. Let's see if your computer can get online without the router.
So this would do the same thing because it's because your computer's really right. When you do that, you're getting link, you're getting an IP address, and you're making sure you can get out to the internet. Well, this will do the same thing. And you just plug in. So right now it's sitting here just blinking, waiting for me to plug in a cable. I don't have a cable, but if I did, I could just plug it in and away I went. But, it's pretty cool because I took it over to, one of my other clients just to mess with it, plugged it right into a switch, and switched to switch, and it just went right on through, gave me all the information, emailed me right away. So $300 on Amazon. So a little, and it's not very big. Gosh, it's smaller than my wallet, but it's got
a battery in there.
Two AA batteries. So it takes two AA batteries. And, when you register it, it asks for, it's got the little serial number down here on the bottom. So when you register the device, you have to put in that information. So it knows this is your device. You give it a name. So it must send, when this communicates to, when it goes to the cloud and it goes back to the Fluke, it must send its information with it. Yeah. Then you've registered it. So it knows where to send the email to.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. It's quicker than a notebook, lugging around the notebook to plug it in.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've dealt with Flukes, and Flukes kind of set the standard for network testing. I don't.
This won't give you like any fault info if a wire is faulty,
no.
Like pin 4 is open, just basic connectivity. Is it connected or not?
Right. Yeah. This doesn't do a lot of what the high end Flukes or the multi-tool Flukes do, where they tell you what the link length is. It doesn't tell you what's open, what pins are open, but it does do.
If you got a cable plugged in the computer and the computer's not getting online, you can just easily just plug this in and get some more information.
Right.
Is it the cable or is it the computer?
Yeah. So I'm all putting up the notification here from it. And I'm going to see what it says, because it does actually give you some information as soon as it opens up here. So it says, it gives me the link, and it was at the time I tested gig. So this does 10 100 gig. You know, transmit, pair all, polarity normal, DHCP, the server, the subnet, DNS1, DNS2, and whether it's static or configged or DNS. The gateway gives you your gateway. Ping in milliseconds, 111, so it tests it 3 times. And then it tests Google. You can change what IP address it tests out, and it tells you what IP address it tested out. It tested out on a port 80, and then the connect, it did a 16 millisecond connect, a 15 millisecond connect, and then a 12 millisecond connect.
Pretty cool.
So yeah, it's not going to give you a lot of information, but it's going to give you information that you may use and may need, and it's quicker than plugging in a notebook and having to do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Especially those times where somebody plugs in a different router, you plug this in and say, oh, look, you got the wrong DHCP server because it should be this and it's this.
Right.
Because customers love to put in their own wireless access points, and they buy routers instead of access points. Now you got two networks. Yeah.
Right. So that was my little toy. I came in last night, opened it up this morning. I was like, oh, I started playing with it before I went on a job. And I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. This is pretty fun.
I like little gadgets like that.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I didn't really, when he showed it to me, I was like, oh, okay. And then I bought it, and I'm like, oh, this is actually pretty fun.
Any gadget's cool to me.
Yeah, that is
true. I just go plug it in the cable just to watch it and get emails and see what happens.
Nope. I think Matt's frozen again. Matt, come back. Come back, Matt. Last week, I had spoken about the issues. Oh, there's Matt. You said you were going to plug in a cable, and then I lost you.
Oh, yeah. I was just plugging cables to watch it work, is what I was saying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Some of the nice fluke ones. It's like watching a little TV show. So last week I had mentioned I had a client who has Windows XP, and they were really reluctant to move to Windows 7. And so Al Reed in the Google Plus had sent me a link, mentioned about an application called DOSBox. And Matt, I think you had said that you had used this before.
I have used it before, yep.
And so is it just an emulator or
yep.
Okay?
Yep.
So
there's people who say no, you can't run Windows 7 because the DOS program won't run right on Windows 7. You can run it inside DOSBox, so it's an application in an application, basically an emulator. So we have used it for people who had to get off XP but still have old DOS programs. Which those people have old DOS programs. I don't like doing this. I tell them no. The real solution is to move off of this software. Not right. To find ways to stay on it longer. But sometimes the computer dies and they have to run this DOS program for a little bit longer. But of course, the downside is once you get them on this, now it becomes a permanent solution.
Right. One of the things that this client did say was, well, maybe we'll get a new computer and just keep this old Windows XP computer offline and then use it just for this, because he doesn't do anything with it. It's just archival data, but he needs to access the data every now and then. So,
yeah, I mean, we've used it and it's worked for our needs. So, I mean, it did. The program does run, but
I know.
I hate supporting the old legacy stuff. They just need to move on. But if you need it, it is a good program.
Right. And they do have a wiki. It's dosbox.com/wiki, and it looks like there's, you know, it tells you how to play games and how to do stuff with it, mounting CD-ROMs and stuff like that. So that's kind of cool. Looks like you can have a whole lot of fun with this if you want to kick it old school.
Yeah, old.
Old school. So you had said that you're already on Cox Communication, right?
Yes.
I have Comcast, and we had spoken about this, we as in Geeksters had spoken about this a couple months ago. I have since purchased my own cable modem, and, you know, the benefits of that is that it's mine. The downfall is that if it breaks, I either have to go buy a new one or really, really prove that it's the cable company's fault and not my fault that the internet is
down. Good luck with that part.
Right. So if you find them on sale, buy two. Anyways, but... The other bonus is that Comcast cannot turn on my home wireless router and make an Xfinity hotspot. So we had talked about this a while ago. It sounds like it's coming to fruition. Comcast is turning on in a public wireless hotspot inside of your own home router, so other Xfinity customers can have the pleasure of going wherever they want to and jumping on your hotspot, your cable modem, and using your internet to surf whatever they want to surf. Now,
it's terrible.
I one side of the coin, they own the device. They can do what they want to it. The other side of the coin is, I rent the device. Get off my network. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like theft of service. I'm paying for the service, not everybody else. I don't want to use Xfinity and over here. I mean, I'm paying for my bandwidth. Right. I'm not paying for other people to use my bandwidth.
Well, and then what? I mean, you know, what are the legal ramifications if somebody comes on there and does something? You know.
Yeah, we detected child porn on this IP address. No, it wasn't me. It was this guest network. I mean, how do they differentiate that?
Right. I don't know. I don't know. But
some kind of logging or.
I wish I knew. So I bought my own one. I don't have a Comcast cable modem anymore. But in the show notes, I'll have a link for where you can do it. You just go to turn it off. Go into your Comcast account at customer.comcast.com. Preferences, and there's a couple. It's only like four steps, but you can go in there and you can actually disable it. You can push the button to disable Xfinity Wi-Fi Home Hotspot. So I would, at one time, it was you were supposed to just call them and say, "Don't turn it on." Chances are that probably fell on deaf ears. So you know what? Do it in your thing. I don't know if they do a big sweep and they turn around and turn everybody's back on after a certain amount of time.
Yeah. They'll turn it off, wait a day or two, because then you've tested it. Oh, okay, it's not showing up, and they kick it back on.
Right. Like if you tried it when Kim Windows first came out, you would make a tweak to it to get unlimited bandwidth, and they would send back the firmware down at night to recap it. And
firmware resets it.
You know, default, so I don't. On. So I wonder if they're going to just, you know, every 6 months turn everybody back on again, and then you have to go back and through and do this again. I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see what happens. But
you mean you won that off forever? I thought this for a little while.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My bad. Yeah, forever, wait, please.
Change their terms of service, and they send the email to an account nobody ever monitors. And they say, we notified you through an email.
That's right. Hey, the Comcast guy's been sitting in your driveway for an hour, wants to turn your hotspot back on. I just got the notice he was on his way. Oh.
See, Cox doesn't supply any routers. I mean, they supply a modem. You're on your own to get a router, and they won't program any routers for you.
Well, I mean, Comcast gives you a router/modem combined.
Yeah, ours is just a modem. They don't have, and I hate those things. I hate those modem routers. All Cox has is plain modems.
Nice. And you can get a decent one. I don't know which one I have, but it's down there underneath the, but it's a DOCSIS 3. I think it was $80, you know, that's right around the going rate, $60 to $80 on, you know, Amazon or Fred Meyer's or Target or Walmart or wherever. You know, they're not expensive. The downfall is that if you have internet issues, you have to prove that it's not you and it's them. But you know, take the good with the bad, I guess.
And I'll say Cox in my area does not have those. That doesn't mean Cox somewhere else does have them. I don't have them in my area, but yeah, I like having a Cox modem, and that's because it's only a modem. I wouldn't have it if it was a combination, because I've had too many issues where a customer got their own modem and Cox won't help them. It must be your modem. Well, why do you say that? Because it's not ours. Okay. Are you that high and mighty on your own modems that they never go bad? They just assume that it's bad if it's not theirs.
Right.
So I've always told people just get it from Cox, but that's, again, it's just a modem.
Yeah. And I mean, I think Comcast, I think you rent it for $8 a month. I just chose to go without one, mainly because of this issue, and really, I didn't want to do it.
There's no extra charge for the modem because it is just a modem. I'm paying for the service. They make sure their service to the modem.
Yeah. No, see, for Comcast, there's a rental fee of $8. Yeah. So you pay for the service, and then you pay for the hardware to support the service you're already paying for. And then they turn around and they turn on a public hotspot so anybody next door can get into your wireless. Now, there has to be some restrictions. I don't have all the, you know, I don't have everything. I would assume, a big assumption here, I would assume that it's maybe a IP address that differs from the one that they give you.
What's to stop you from disconnecting from your own, connect to the guest one and downloading child porn and then say, no, it wasn't me. It was on the guest network. There must be somebody else. I mean, I just don't like other people connecting to my bandwidth. I don't want any ambiguity of who's on my network. I want me and that's it. I don't want other people on it.
Right. Cause if it crosses
same thing for businesses, I don't like guest networks and businesses. We'll get them for clients if they want them, but really I tell them, why do you care if somebody wants to download music videos or stream video while they're in your waiting room for 5 minutes? I mean, I guess you can have it if you want, but it's taking up your bandwidth. Yes, we can throttle it, but then all that gets the user is a slow download or aggravating connection. So if you throttle it to protect your own bandwidth, you're really providing a bad experience for your customer who you're trying to provide a good service to. I don't know.
I mean, we have a public and a guest one at a school. So that way when they have baseball games or basketball, basketball games in-house, there's a place for the parents to come in and sit down. Now they get port 80, port 443, and I think that's it. They can't, you know, they're not there. They don't, or they may get 25 and 110 or 110. So they can get email down. They can't send email out. They can do basic web browsing. But then we're also behind, you know, using the paid OpenDNS. So they can't, the last thing I want is somebody to come in, sit down, get on the free guest wireless, and then do something out of a school. So
yeah, in a school, if it's for basketball games, baseball games, those are going to be after hours anyway. You're not really, nobody's on the network of the school.
Right. Right.
I've had businesses where they were complaining that their internet was too slow. And I said, well, that's because your guest, I watched the traffic. I said, your guest network's taking up too much bandwidth. I said, I can throttle it. So then we throttled it. Then they had complaints from customers waiting that their video was choppy. I was like, well, what do you want? You got 40 people in your waiting room, all of them trying to download video. Do you want to have them have the bandwidth or do you want the bandwidth? I mean, they didn't want to increase their bandwidth. They didn't want to pay more.
That's right. No, I want more, but I don't want to pay for anything more.
Yeah, they want to keep their same 3 meg plan. I say, well, I mean, you've got to make some decisions. If you're going to keep the 3 meg plan, you can't have this.
My bonded DSL just isn't working.
So, yeah, they don't understand. Well, I have internet. Yes, you have internet, but
you have internet because that's all you will pay for.
Yeah,
I mean, we don't have internet.
Yeah, and those kind of discussions with the client are pretty fun. I mean. You can't drive 300 miles an hour because you have a tricycle.
That's right.
You know, if you want to go that fast, get a sports car that will go that fast. You can't download this much video on your connection. You just can't. So, I mean, they were all streaming. This particular car was really bad because it was such an evident. When I killed it, the bandwidth went up complete. I mean, it was evident. The people in the waiting room were all doing stuff. The employees were all streaming online, streaming music and videos. I mean, I showed them. I killed the guest network, and their videos increased. I killed the video on the main side. You know, I can show them. It's an even correlation.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're taking it, you can't. And I can throttle it, but then they actually got complaints about how they couldn't stream Netflix in the waiting room.
Right.
I was like, this is your decision. Do you want them to do that or not?
It is funny how we go through life, and everybody knows. I mean, it's a simple thing that we learn in math really young. You can't have, if you take one from one side, you're going to have the other. You can see it in salt water and fresh water. You can see it in tides. It happens all over the place. But yet when it comes to internet, it's just, no, magically, it just adds on. It's just wireless, right? It just gets it and it just adds more on there. And you're like, no, it's the same. You can't take, you know, if you take from this side, you give to this side and you can't.
Yeah. And they said, what do you recommend? I said, I recommend you get the better internet connection. No, right. What else do you recommend?
Great.
Kill the wireless network. Kill the guest network. We can't do that. Okay. Well, none of my recommendations you're gonna like. So let's
but
just.
It just gets worse from there. I can keep going if you want, but
we don't want to spend any money. But we want everybody to stream whatever they want without any problems. Well, I would like that too.
Exactly.
Let me sign up for that waiting list. Yeah.
I have the same issue at home.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the fun of these clients. Sometimes is listening to their ideas.
Right. And I just like the whole, I have this notebook or this tablet or whatever, and it's wireless. So how come I can't get internet? Where are you at? I'm in the middle of a parking lot somewhere. Well, because you have to be connected to something, but it's wireless. Well, no, but you have to, you know, you see where this is going.
You have to connect to something, right?
Right.
Yeah,
no, but I bought it wireless.
So something is sending out a signal. If there's nothing sending out a signal, you won't receive anything. So in the parking lot, no one is sending out a signal. No one is providing access to the parking lot.
How can I fix it? Well, you can go with the cellular plan.
Yeah,
I don't want to go with the cellular plan.
Go to Target. If you're in Target, go to the customer service desk and just tell them that you need to be able to access their Wi-Fi out in their parking lot. And just work with them on that.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know where I had that conversation. It was something along those lines of basically just add more because it's just the internet. I'm like, I can't. I think it was after a long day and I remember just kind of shaking my head, kind of explaining the best I could and saying, I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm holding it in right now.
Yeah. Whew. At the end of a long day, sometimes you got to hold your tongue, I found.
Yeah. And I've been working so many long hours that yesterday it was interesting that this business trip, I actually felt very refreshed. And what it was is because, you know, you do it, I do it, I think all of us do it, is that we multitask so much that we're just stretched so very thin on a whole bunch of different objects that when you get a chance to just do one thing and you do it and that's what you're doing for the day, you kind of go, oh, this feels, I feel like I've been productive. I feel like I've gotten something done. It feels great. I'm not tired. Yeah, and that was what
it's rare when I get to work on one thing at a time. That's very rare.
Right. I was at, even though I flew down, had a great time meeting, we went out to lunch. I got to work on one client and handle that one client's issues. And it was a lot of little things, but it was one client. And then I came home. I was like, oh, I'm tired because I only got about 3 hours of sleep the night before, but I was like, I feel good. I had a good day.
Yeah. See, when I work, I'm usually at the office doing all the remote work. And I think I've said this before. And I send all the texts out. So the texts get to go here, then here, then here, then here. But I'm working on 3 or 4 or 5 different things at once on my 3-monitor system. So I've got this going, this going, this going. I've got Log Me In Rescue going with 3 connections. I mean, I'm working on a lot of things at once. So sometimes it happens to where I have to go on site somewhere. And I'm like, oh, I got to go on site. I'm so annoying. You know, but when I go, I'm like, oh, this is so nice. I'm working on this person's connection. Yep. And that's it. Like today I had to go scope out a client wanted to add a network cable, expand their network. So I had to go on site and look how we're going to run the network cable to the new part of the building. And that's all it was. But it was nice for that half an hour just to go do that one thing.
Right. I'm going to monotask and it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, when I look at my billing for the day, I'm not as happy. But
well, yes. But, you know.
Oh, only billed 6 hours today as opposed to, well, I was able to bill 11, 12 hours today. You know, that's, yeah. But that happens. You need your sanity sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Speaking of sanity, I've been fighting a computer that has had it had a rootkit, and it was messed up. Just completely messed up. And so I ended up having to reload it this weekend. And when I reloaded it, I think it was Friday, Saturday. Yeah, it was Friday or Saturday. Reloaded it and took it back. But it had a rootkit on it, and I was able to clean it with JRT and all this other kind of stuff. But the problem is that this person serves Facebook, and which is not inherently not bad, except for the fact that what happens is Facebook needs Flash and Java and stuff like that to run, and then those become vulnerabilities because everybody knows that. And if you listen to any kind of security podcast, you know that Flash and Java, and they're all just they're just a big pile of Swiss cheese. Well, Malwarebytes last week came out with their anti-exploit, and it's and it does things for Java and stuff like that, and it just runs. And they have a 3-version tier system, so they have the free home one, and it just handles things like Java and I think Shockwave and stuff. Then they have a home premium one, which is all of that plus PDF, Office, media players, and then it says it also allows people to create custom shields. And then there's a business one, which the business one looks like it's the same as the premium, except it has a central command, central console, which is great for that. And I'll have a link in the show notes for that, but it's the new Malwarebytes anti-exploit. I went ahead and threw it on my VM just to see what it would do. And, I was pretty impressed by it. It doesn't do anything. And what I mean by it's not, you know, we think of Malwarebytes and we think of the scanner. You know, this was the first question you asked me. What does it do? Do you have to scan something? And it just kind of runs in the task tray and then it blocks stuff. And, there's a video on their website that they show somebody going to a link and then getting the, it's not the crypto locker, but the crypto something. And it encrypted all their data, and they showed, they used a program. And I can't remember what it was now, but they used a program where they could see the links, what it was doing. It wasn't Wireshark or anything. It was a very simple network scanning. It was a weird name. I can't remember the name. But they show it doing it, and they show how it redirects once, redirects twice, and then it downloads this application, and then it gets installed. And then they basically took the VM back, and they did it again with this installed, and it downloaded. It ran through, redirected once, redirected twice, went to download, and as soon as it downloaded, it popped open the malware exploit and said, by the way, here it is, and we blocked it. So it just sits and waits for something to happen before it actually becomes active. It's not like the Malwarebytes where the paid version constantly scanning and checking for stuff. So I thought I'd, you know, throw it out there. It's free. It's 3 megs, but it looks interesting. It looks like it's kind of in a beta mode. It says it says they're delighted after following it a year of beta testing. So, you know?
So I guess it sits in there, and if something's requesting Java, it says, hey, this thing's requesting Java, let's look at it, and is it bad or not?
Right. So I'm going to probably throw it. I may throw it on this user's computer that's having issues, and I may throw it on a couple other computers just randomly out there. I haven't decided whether or not this is going to be part of my toolkit because, you know, you get to a point where you have all of these great tools that could all do all of these great things, and then you put all of these tools to protect your client, but then now what you've done nothing but hinder them because there's so much protection, you know? Mm-hmm. You can only wear, you know.
Yeah. You can only do so and the, much. The biggest thing I've always said is user training. I mean, users have to be able to know what to click on, what not to click on.
Right.
I had two clients last week get infected with a crypto locker.
Oh.
On big networks, all the network shares were encrypted. Two big clients. One was a TV station. One was another pretty big client. Everything was encrypted because they clicked on a link in an email. One person got a link on the email about a fax, and they tried to open it on their iPhone, couldn't open it, forwarded it to the girl at the office. Here, open this. She opened it. And, of course, you don't notice for hours and hours that it's encrypted or that it's doing anything. So she called. Actually, I had connected to her computer in the morning because she said a site didn't work. So I showed her how to put a site in compatibility mode, and the site worked, disconnected. She calls back 3 hours later saying, I'm not sure what you did, but now I can't open any of my files. I said, well, all I did was click the compatibility view button. So I reconnected back to her computer, saw the decrypt instruction text file, said, oh, God. I said, you got crypto locker. They're all locked. And, of course, I didn't know it was her. She was actually the source of it, but I didn't know. So, you know, of course, you can go look at the owner of the decrypt instruction text file, see who the owner is in that file, and that's who encrypted it. So I was like, well, you encrypted everything. Did you do anything? No. I said, what happened at about 8:15 in the morning? Was there an email? No. Oh, it was just a fax email. Look, with fax email. And she told me a story. I said, that was a virus. I said, that's what did it. So company down for a day and a half or a day, I guess the rest of the day. The next company was even worse because they had even more data that had got encrypted. But that was fun. But user training. Now, I wonder if the anti-exploit would have stopped that.
I don't know. What did you end up doing for those companies?
I found two computers that had the CryptoLocker on them. So we took those, wiped them, reinstalled them. Now, for the data, both of these clients had backup servers running AppAssure. I don't know if you've ever heard of AppAssure.
I have not.
So it takes snapshots every hour of the system, of all the servers. It takes a full snapshot. So we were able to...
Dell owns it.
Yeah, Dell bought it. I mean, we had been using it before Dell bought them, but Dell bought them out. So it's still a good program. So we were able to just actually delete the whole entire volume off the server and restore from backup. I think the first infection was about 8:15, and the last snapshot was like 8 o'clock.
Oh.
So we just restored from 8 o'clock. So they lost a few minutes of stuff. And, of course, there was some time in between where maybe this folder wasn't encrypted until 9 o'clock that they may have changed, but we just deleted the whole volumes and restored them. So that worked out pretty good. In fact, AppAssure, you can tell it to restore the whole volume. And the way it restores the volume is it just starts doing a regular copy. But if you request, let's say, file XYZ, that file gets put to the top of the queue to restore it. So you can still access the files while they're being restored.
Got it. So this works on the server. So this backed up the server information, right?
It's a different server. So we have it on a dedicated server, and it has agents that are run on each server.
Okay.
So each backup is a recovery point. So like you can go explore the recovery points as they exist. So I can go, I went to 9. I saw the decrypt instruction. Went to 8. Wasn't there. And you can do a search just like you search in Windows. So I I mounted the 8 o'clock recovery point, did a search for the decrypt instruction on the whole volume, and it wasn't anywhere. So I knew that recovery point was clean.
Got it. How does it do recovery just on the servers, or how does it recover data on the client machines?
Oh, well, it doesn't unless you have an agent for the clients.
Okay.
So you can install an agent. It's all licensed different way, so we only have it on the servers, but you can license it for the workstation and back those up as well.
So clients, basically, if they had any personal documentation on their local machine that was not on the server.
Desktop or something. Yeah, that's gone.
That's gone. Okay. Yeah, last December I had a client that I was called into consult my first crypto locker. And then my sister 2 weeks ago hit crypto locker as well.
Yeah, I heard about that. I heard the show. Yeah.
Yeah. And the backup didn't work and it's been messy. She's back up and running. She didn't lose a whole lot, but it's still, you know, it's awful. Awful. So I don't know if this will do it, but definitely the crypto prevent from Nick Shaw and group policies. I've been doing a lot of the group policies if they're there.
Yeah, I need to go in and do that. Of course, I know about that. I've never actually implemented it anywhere yet, but now that this happened twice in 1 week, we're going to probably go back and especially for our service agreement customers, I'm probably going to go and put that on them.
Yeah, yeah.
That saves us time.
If
they get it, I got to restore it all for free. Might as well just put the crypto prevent on it, try and prevent it.
Right. Yeah, and I did talk to Nick. We had a client a couple weeks ago who wanted to put Firefox. Mozilla product. And so that extracts as a 7-zip in the temporary directory, and by default, that gets done. So if you're doing that in the group policy, you can whitelist that. CryptoLocker 6 is out now, and he's made some big adjustments and big changes in there. So you could either, so there's two ways to do it. Either take the crypto prevent and go install it in everybody's computer, or just do it as a group policy.
Yeah, group policy.
And group policy. I mean, if I have one computer, you know, I support a company, and they have, you know, one computer at all these different locations, and they're all in their own work group. I send them an email and said, hey, you guys need to do this. But if it's, if I have group policy, I do it with group policy.
Yeah, it's much easier. You put a new computer in, you don't need to remember to install it. It just installs it from group policy.
Yeah, done. Yeah,
that's much easier.
Yeah. So, you know, I like having you coming on here myself, because I miss, you know, I do miss the Podness Pro. I know last time you were on here, we talked about, you know, you guys maybe coming back on, maybe not. Life's busy. You don't know.
Yeah, it's still in a we'll see.
It is, and I understand that. But I miss having, you know, because I deal with a lot of servers and networks, and I miss podcasts that talk about that. I came across one, and it was a recommendation, and it's called Tips from the Server Room. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but he just did one on tips from the trenches, but then he's got ones about Windows deployment services, load balancing, network monitoring, wireless networks, DNS change types, domain trust relationships, and they're not very long. I think each one's about 35 to 45 minutes.
Check it out.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good. He records on Tuesday nights. He records 5 o'clock. I don't know what his time zone is, but it's a gentleman by the name of Jack Okorn. OKORN. He just joined the tech podcast community.
Okay.
But his stuff is really good. He has got some good stuff. And he talked about, his last one was talking about the trenches, and I just wrote him an email. He was talking about if you have a gateway, one of the issues was that if you have a cable modem, and then you have your firewall, your new gateway is now the firewall, not the cable modem, right? Because if you keep it as a cable modem, then you basically can bypass the firewall, and then what's the point of having a firewall? I wrote him back letting him know that one of the standards that I've been doing is a lot of times your cable modem will give you a DHCP on it. I will assign my firewall the first static IP address, shrink the DHCP scope down on the cable modem, and then by default, then now my DHCP, whether it's from a different router or from your server, will point to the firewall as your default gateway. What this allows me to do is allows me to, if there's network issues and we can't figure out what's going on, to take my laptop, plug it directly into the cable modem, get DHCP from there, and then see if I can get out to the network there. It allows me to go around that. So we just talked about that a little bit, but I wanted to let people know that I've really enjoyed his shows, and will keep me going, because I miss Podnuts Pro. Nudge, nudge.
Yeah, well,
that's an elbow.
I miss it too. I like coming on Geeksters when I can, and I mean Podnuts Daily. I think I'll be on Podnuts Daily again soon too, because
yeah,
I talked to him over there. So yeah, I like coming on once in a while when I can. It's just like y'all. I mean, things happen. I mean, y'all can't recall every week, record every week either, because life is always hectic and things come up. But yeah, I like to do it when I can.
Yeah,
it's always good to come on Geeksters too. So
well, mi casa es su casa.
Cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're on the Podnuts way before me, so I'm just here. You just pull rank.
No.
Do I have to remind you how much seniority I have on the Podnuts network? I will come on when I want to come on.
Yeah, that doesn't work that way.
That's really what happened. He bumped Mitch today. I couldn't even stop it. He's like, Mitch, go.
Sorry, Mitch.
Sorry, Mitch. We just keep going on that path. But anyways, if people want to get a hold of you and talk to you about soccer, talk to you about your forums and stuff like that, what's the best play?
Probably the best way right now is a couple ways now. So Twitter, Podnuts Pro, mm-hmm. or you can email me at go to the IT, informedit.net. There's a link in there for email, info@informedit.net. That's probably the two best ways.
Yeah.
I try and be on Twitter more, but I always forget about it. But I'm trying.
Yeah. Social media is hard to keep up with sometimes.
Yeah.
There are days where I forget to check something, or I can't check something, and I'm like, do I really want to check it? Because now there's a lot of stuff I missed, and I got to go back and find it. And what if I don't see something that I really like? And then I'm just laying in bed trying to make sure I can get everything, and then I fall asleep. So it doesn't.
Yeah. So probably email is better. I check email more than I do anything else. info@informedit.net is probably the best way.
All right. info@informedit.net. Great. And if people want to get a hold of me, martin@obandocomputing.com, we get some emails every now and then. And if you just want to email Geeksters or send us a voicemail, the voicemail is 7076-PODNUT. 7076-PODNUT. And if you want to send us an email, it's geeksters@podnuts.com. I think that's it. Usually Mitch has got a banner up, so I just have to read it from there. And now I feel bad because I've given Cody so much grief for forgetting stuff and on Linux for the rest of us. And now I'm like, oh man, if I forget, I'm going to hear about it. So yeah. Cody, if you're listening to this, I scored. I got it. 7076-PODNUT. Well, guys, thanks for coming out tonight and joining us and listening to us. And I think next week we have Lisa Hendrickson? Uh-oh. From Call That Girl. Sorry, Lisa. From Call That Girl, she's going to come on and tell us what's going on with her. And just keep chugging along. So thanks, everybody, for coming out. Have a great, great week.
D72 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.